Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. I'm Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And we are the Donald in the Kitchen. We get together here on this community radio station, KHOI. We do that because we like talking about food, farming.
Yeah, yeah. And today we're going to be eating with you, only you guys don't get to taste it. I'm sorry.
Yes. Happy almost St. Patrick's Day. I brought in a little something to to celebrate. And Donna has already dove in.
I couldn't wait.
I brought in some Irish soda bread. And also, besides some Irish soda bread here in the studio, we have a special guest, Helen Gunderson. Welcome to the studio, Helen Gunderson.
Well, thank you.
Good. We are going to be talking about bread today and some other things, too, of course. But we just had to dive into the Irish soda bread first because it is almost St. Patrick's Day. I don't think any Irish roots at all, but I can follow a recipe, and I will share the recipe for the Irish soda bread later.
Lana, you've done enough Irish dancing and Irish music to thoroughly qualify you as Irish.
Besides the ability to enjoy and endure and tell a good tale, the Irish have given us lovely bunches of music. Celtic music is. Helen is here to talk about bread in general and bread that is.
Bread making.
Donna, you have been on a food.
Wait, we forgot something, Lana.
What?
Support comes from Wheatsville Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocer in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsville Co-op. There you have it.
Thank you, Donna. We are a good team. So, Donna, you've been on a food road trip.
Oh, yeah. Every year this time of year, I go out to Anaheim, California, which is the home of the original Disneyland. It's quite a place. And it also has a very, very large convention center. And there they have a very, very large, think 80,000 people in 3 days going through what is called Expo West. And that is the largest natural products trade show probably in the world. And every year it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I go out because I cook at the very beginning a fundraising luncheon for Organic Farming Research Foundation, one of my favorite NGOs that has for 20-some years done a lot of organic on-farming research, especially in the face of a government not being supportive and not doing the research, and the universities as well, although that's slightly improving. Anyway, I support Organic Farming Research Foundation, and then I go to this show, which is like, I mean, it's three floors of maybe 4-football-sized fields of booth after booth of product. You know, everything you would see in the natural food stores or even in the natural food section, like at the Hy-Vee. So everything organic, everything natural, body care products, ingredients, vitamins, packaging. It's quite fascinating.
It sounds like a huge opportunity for samples.
Oh, my God. Eat. Here's the joke. One of the reasons our luncheon is so successful is that you go to the natural food show, and we can fairly claim that it's the only organic, well orchestrated meal in the whole place. Because once you hit the show floor, you're having like a sample of chai. One year there were so many soy products, you just wanted to barf. You know, this chocolate, that ice cream, and everything is kind of like a bite of this, a bite of that. And you can imagine what happens to your digestion by the end of the day.
Even if it is all so-called
absolutely,
natural.
Absolutely.
Good heavens. So you put together a fine meal. What did you cook this year?
Oh, we did Indian food because this is the UN has declared this, the Food and Agriculture Organization has declared this the year of the pulse. We've talked about that. Pulse is being beans and lentils. And so the theme of our meal was feel the pulse.
I didn't
think of that part. I just said, okay, we'll do Indian food.
Somebody has to say it anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we did tamarind chicken and lamb with mint and cilantro chutney, and then various. Actually, my favorite was we actually had, and all the food is donated by different organic companies, and everything is organic or we don't use it. Melissa's Produce donated us several cases of young baby coconuts. So we took the, you know, and this was hysterical because we're in this big Airmark kitchen and we have all these, it's three chefs who volunteer, including myself. And then we have the regular Airmark staff who come in and help us. And so these poor women, I said, I'm sorry, we don't have machetes. We're going to have to knock these open with our knives. And so we had to, you know, cut the holes in the coconuts, young baby Thai coconuts. So you get the juice out and then you have to whack it open and scrape the pulp out from the inside, which we then pulverized and cooked a red lentil into a dal. So we had a coconut dal made with fresh coconut milk, fresh coconut meat, and the red lentils. And it was good. It was butter, of course. I've had to put butter in it. You know, you have to have butter with beans. But it was good. It was really good. So a bit about the expo is the headlines were Unstoppable Growth in the Natural, Organic, and Healthy Industry. And the second article about this that I was reading is, will the FDA define natural? And the lawyer who's talking about it says, don't hold your breath.
That's right, because it seems the first headline you read, oh boy, more natural food. That sounds really good
for
us.
Well, it is in terms of the marketplace.
Yeah. But on the other hand,
but that includes natural, sustainable, all these labels, all the compliance labels like fair trade, grass-fed, da-da-da-da-da.
Even now, it's hard to know.
It's very confusing for a lot of people.
You put this stuff, you put the word natural on the cover, and who knows what it is, but it seems like a good try.
Well, the thing is, somebody reputable recently did a consumer survey that was taken very seriously where they found out that consumers actually now care more about the, quote, sustainability issues being all of these issues. They are more interested in that than cheap food. Huh? So they will pay more if they feel that it's healthier and better for them and better for the environment, which is a major...
That sounds like a
change.
That's
a good trend. That is a trend.
That's good.
But this trend, you know, those are big words. But the natural products industry, which includes all of the things that we've just mentioned, has for a good number of years been the only part of the whole food and the entire food industry that is actually growing. Mainstream grocery products, what we now call conventional, are, as they would say in the financial world, they're flatlining. There's not any growth there. And all the growth is in these kinds of products. And I have to say, after going to this show for the last 18 years and seeing it grow from, you know, only 2 football field sizes to much, much every year, it's bigger and crazier. And it also said that this year, the majority, 53% of all of these natural and organic products are coming through what they call mainstream channels, which is like your Hy-Vee, your Fairway. It's very much no longer a niche. It has been widely, widely adopted.
And we consumers out there are going and voting with our pocketbooks, evidently, and buying this stuff and enjoying it, too. So there we have it.
Ah, yeah.
Good.
So it was a... It was a wild show, and the trends were grass-fed, probiotics, fermented food products with adaptogens in it, which are...
Now, that's a new one.
Yeah, that's any kind of herb, a lot of Chinese herbs, but not all Chinese herbs. There are many herbs that are called adaptogens because they actually help your body adapt. Now...
We'll see.
We'll do a whole show on that one. That's a kind of an interesting thing. But, you know, lots of products made from pulses, pea proteins, a lot of, like
pea
chips
protein.
With pea proteins in them, legumes in the in the chips.
The food industry can
functional
take just about,
foods. Yeah.
Just about anything and make it into a chip and we'll eat it. So there you
That's
go.
True.
It might as well.
They put enough salt and flavoring in it.
It must be
we'll
good.
Eat it. We'll
so
eat it.
We'll look for this stuff on our shelves and talk about this stuff more. Because, oh, that's interesting. That's great.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I can't even begin to summarize what you experience when you go there. So this is just the overview.
Oh, good.
But
oh,
I survived. Good. I survived.
Good for you. Good for you. And you got to cook pulses. We'll also talk about pulses more during the year. I like that word anyway. Pulses. Pulses. Speaking of trends, eating habits, I've got a little bit of thinking about spring and getting garden things ready.
Yeah, we're all thinking about spring.
Yeah.
Helen brought in.
Helen Gunderson.
Tell us what's in this little package, Helen.
Surprise.
It's from my urban farm on Burnett in Ames. And it is spinach that I planted last fall in a cold frame. And
it's gorgeous.
Yeah, Matt Liebman, who's the director of the sustainable, let's see, what's his program?
Sustainable agriculture.
Anyway, at Iowa State, he's really a guru of that and a leader.
I'm eating it raw. Oh, it's yummy.
And he shared some of this kind of spinach with me a couple of years ago, and he said, this is what spinach is supposed to be.
What's the name of this variety, do you
know? It's a Savoy spinach. Mm-hmm. Started in the fall, like in late August or September.
It's kind of rich and thick. And,
yeah, you let it grow up. And in the spring, this is just very young yet in the spring, but it's supposed to be chewy and fresh.
He said, it has some nice body to
it. This is how spinach is supposed to be, not the really light, fluffy stuff.
Yeah.
And the word Savoy, for those of you who are looking into seed catalogs now, Savoy generally refers to the spinach that's a little lumpy leaf, crinkly leaves a little bit, if it's Savoyed.
It's very pretty.
Oh, it's lovely.
I'm actually, if there's some people that know me out there, I have some seed left from what I planted last fall, and if they wanted to put some in the ground this spring, I think it would still work.
Call Helen.
There you go. Good. So spring. Yeah, seed catalogs. I'm getting those seeds in the ground. Not in the ground.
I was going to ask you if you're sprouting a little bit early this year because we've got such.
I have been extremely brave in the greenhouse, and I have lots and lots of flats started. So, yeah.
So you two are both good gardeners, as opposed to myself. Are we going to break the rule of not planting before our usual frost date? What about you, Helen?
I'm not exactly a wise gardener. I'm a relatively new one, and I take advice from books, or I call Lana or other gurus.
I often say, I don't have to go to the casinos here in Iowa because I farm.
You're a big gambler,
yeah,
right?
You just take your chances, and we don't really know. The weather patterns seem to be really interesting, but I'm taking advantage of what warm we have.
So you're going to start before the normal frost date then?
Well,
some things.
Yeah. Oh, well, I have already. I mean, I kind of things. Yeah, I haven't put anything outside yet. But
I'm about ready to put when the ground dries a little bit. I'm going to maybe put some peas in.
Go for it.
And
go for it.
My feeling is, what have I lost?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And really, they'll sit there and do good things. Even well, like you said, the spinach too. We'll just they don't mind a little cold, so we can start getting our fingers dirty. Any time now, yes.
Okay, so Lana, I'm going to ask you for weekly updates on what you've been brave enough to stick outside early this year.
All right.
Okay,
and if anybody out there wants to share some gardening,
call in with your own personal gambling habits.
Yes, actually, we'll start that.
Not all of them, please.
Next week.
No, just the gardening variety.
Yeah, we should have a hotline here. Check in with the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're going to start that next week. I have a little reading here. Every now and then, I like to read a little bit here. I enjoy the magazine called The Sun. It's a magazine that has writing from writers all over, and they just send in little thoughts and stories and poems and this and that. And this is from 2012, one of these kind of magazines that just sit around. You can reread them. Very nice. Anyway, this is from The Sun, and I want to share this with you because it's a parable. It's a parable that has to do with hopes and dreams and gifts and responsibilities. So thinking of hopes for spring, hopes for our garden, and responsibilities, there's also this thing called the election cycle that's happening, too. So think of things in a bigger, bigger sort of hopes and dreams that way. Here we go. It's by Megan McKenna, and it's from her book called Parables, The Arrows of God. And this is just a short bit, a parable. There was a woman who wanted peace in the world and peace in her heart and all sorts of good things, but she was very frustrated. The world seemed to be falling apart. She'd read the papers and get depressed. One day she decided to go shopping. She went to the mall and picked a store at random. She walked in and was surprised to see Jesus behind the counter. She knew it was Jesus because he looked just like the images she'd seen on the holy cards and the devotional pictures. And she looked again and said, "Excuse me, are you Jesus?" "I am." "Do you work here?" "No," Jesus says, "I own the store." "Oh, what do you sell in here?" "Ooh, just about anything." "Anything?" she asked. "Yes," he said, "anything you want. What do you want?" she said. "Oh, I don't know." "Well," Jesus said, "feel free to walk up and down the aisles. Make a list. See what you want. Come back and we'll see what we can do for you." She did just that, walked up and down the aisles. There was peace on earth, no more war, no hunger or poverty, peace in families, no more drugs, harmony, clean air, careful use of resources. She wrote furiously. By the time she got back to the counter, she had a long list. Jesus took the list, skimmed through it, looked up and said, "No problem." And then he bent down behind the counter and picked out all sorts of things, stood up, and laid out some packets. She said, "What are these?" Jesus replied, "Seed packets. This is a seed catalog store." She said, "You mean I don't get the finished product?" "No," he said, "this is a place of dreams. You come in, see what it looks like, and I give you the seeds. You plant the seeds. You go home and nurture them. You help them grow. And someone else reaps the benefits." "Oh," she said. She left the store without buying anything.
Oh, dear. I just don't like the ending.
Yeah, I know.
It could change the parable.
Yeah.
You could rewrite it.
We'll rewrite it.
That's fine. But yeah, it's we have to kind of grow our own dreams. So that was a nice thought for spring and a nice thought for our lives in general. You are listening to KHOI 89.1, Story City Ames. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thank you. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was some fine Irish music for St. Patrick's Day by the band Lunasa. We'll have some more good tunes later. But right now, here in our very own kitchen, we are joined by Helen Gunderson. Welcome, Helen.
Hi.
Ames is lucky to have Helen Gunderson as a urban farmer. She has a house here in town and has made the most of her yard.
And several yards.
And she grew up in northwestern Iowa. She's a filmmaker and does a lot of really fun things. And today, another fun thing, we're going to talk to her about bread.
She's an avid baker, which I admire. Both of you bake quite well. I am not a baker. You know, in the culinary world, there are cooks, bakers, and pastry chefs.
Why is that? I don't know.
Because it's a complete discipline in art in and of itself.
Ah, very good. So, Helen, how did you get started and why bread?
I'm not sure. I don't really recall my mother or other ancestors making bread, even though I grew up on a farm.
You're from the Wonder Bread generation already, yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Presbyterian with white colonial bread, white bread,
absolutely.
Communion cubes.
Mm-hmm.
And our lunch often was white bread with...
Bologna?
Something like bologna and cheese and pickle relish.
Mm-hmm.
And store-bought cookies. But to put a framework around this... years ago, I lived in California. I'd gone out there to a Presbyterian seminary and then stuck around. And I had friends who gave me this book that's in front of you, Donna. It's the New Laurel's Kitchen, which was a 1986.
A classic.
And for some reason, I just thought making bread would be great. And so in this book, they have a wonderful section on bread baking. And I'd like you to read this paragraph.
Making whole grain bread, right. So this is from the New Laurel's Kitchen, which was a very popular baking book. That and the, what was the Zen one, too?
I
have a beaten up copy of that, too. But it says, so far as we've been able to tell, written recipes for bread, this was in 1986, mind you, even ones for whole wheat bread are based on the way white flour acts. But using whole wheat in a white flour manner often doesn't work. And that has unfairly given whole wheat bread a bad name. White flour is not only milled to remove the bran and the wheat germ, but blended and chemically treated to make it utterly uniform from bag to bag. Whole wheat flour can't be blended and standardized, so each batch has its own personality. I would say very, very true, even in the pastry, because I've used whole wheat for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think I don't know exactly why I wanted to get into whole wheat bread making, but it just seems something virtuous.
Something whole, yes.
It's something more virtuous than making cakes.
Whole
and
healthy, yes.
That interest, and I used Laurel's Kitchen Cookbook for a long time to make bread, and I didn't really make it that regularly. I guess there'd be years that I wouldn't make bread, and then maybe sometime I would try. And
we're talking about yeasted breads.
Yeasted
here.
Bread.
Mm-hmm.
And I became aware through Practical Farmers of Iowa of the local food movement and trying to source things locally. And, of course, I think people thought that the good wheats or good wheat was from someplace like Kansas or Montana or
yeah.
someplace like that.
Someplace else.
And even though wheat was grown in Iowa decades or centuries ago, Iowa was known for oats, corn, and soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
But there came this thing of cover crops in Iowa, and you talked about how at your fair that you went to, they talked about the trend was toward consumers wanting food products that help the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cover crops such as wheat and oats and other things do help the environment.
Because they help the soil.
Yeah. And
soil building.
Yeah. And the purchase of local products such as the wheat or the oats off of cover crops could be sold and help the economy. But there weren't a lot of markets, I think, for people that had wheat to sell. And
right, there was no milling, no infrastructure for it.
Yeah. And Tomoko, is her name, Agawa, was on the staff of PFI, and she did a lot of research and tried to get bakeries in Iowa to use
local wheat.
And so I had this interest, how can I use local wheat? And part of the synergy of things was, is I have some farmland, and a third of it, a young woman was transitioning to organic, and she'd put in some wheat.
Because with organic cropping, you cannot grow corn, soy. You have to have a third small grain crop in there to build the soil.
Mm-hmm. That's part of it.
Yeah.
So I was really eager to take some wheat from that property, bring it to my kitchen and cook it.
Yeah, fine. Grow your own wheat. Not everyone can do that, Helen.
Well, I have another story to tell, but I want to get more to the point here. So she sold her wheat, our wheat, we were on crop share, to Early Morning Harvest.
Oh.
Over by
which
Panora.
Is Earl Hafner and his son.
Yeah. And so they have this big business on their farm, and they cleaned the wheat, and then I bought some bags from them. Mm-hmm. And in fact, just before I came here, part of the reason why I was almost late is Early Morning Harvest delivered 100 pounds of corn kernels and 100 pounds of wheat berries to my place so I can use them. So then I can remember going to the North Grand Farmers Market and meeting Bill Lindsay and his wife, Mary Beth, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was a master's degree in agronomy.
Great baker.
Great baker and great talker. He would answer my questions.
The best bagels in the world.
Yeah. So he recommended then that I get The Bread Baker's Apprentice. It's a book by Peter Reinhardt, The Bread Baker's Apprentice. And it is published, I see, in 2001. And I probably got this, I don't know, 2006 or 7. And it had one whole wheat recipe in it. It had a whole background, chapters of background of the science. I hardly understood it, but I read it, and it was helpful to do so.
It won several James Beard Awards. Very, very good and thorough book.
Mm-hmm. And then I discovered that he had a new book out in 2007, Peter Reinhardt's Whole Grain Breads, and that's become my Bible. And then he has another book out, The Bread Revolution.
That's his latest, right?
I don't know if it's his latest, but I got it. And the neat thing about it is that it has things like sprouted grains in it. But I've backed up. I wrote to his blog or someplace online, and I said, do I really need to learn his new style, or can I use his style from the whole grain bread book recipe book? Because I had invested myself in his system.
Well, you've kind of perfected a habit. You know, bread baking is, I really consider it a habit if you do it, because you have to do this and then this and then this, and it's not like you're stir frying a bunch of greens or something.
So from his different work, I have a list at home inside a cupboard. I think my very favorite one is sprouted wheat bread. I like to use his whole wheat focaccia bread.
Are you sprouting your own grains then for that?
The first one, sprouted wheat bread, I actually did.
Mm-hmm.
I sprouted it, let it dry, and then I ground it.
Hmm. So, yes, Ellen grinds her own flour too.
Yeah, I have a Nutrimill.
She's quite thorough.
I have a Nutrimill that's made in Salt Lake City. I had used the attachment for my KitchenAid mixer. And, of course, some people do it by hand, but I'm getting older and, you know, I didn't
want it. It's easier to press the button.
There's another one that's just really great. It's called Spent Grain Bread.
And oh, tell us about Spent Grain. I have had some of your Spent Grain Breads.
Well, basically,
what is Spent Grain?
Spent Grain is the grain. Is it a mix of grains? Anyway, it's grain that's left over after making beer.
It could depend on what the beer is made out of, but it's the stuff that's left over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it can be different kinds of grains that
barley,
went into
that. Barley, wheat, I suppose, but maybe might throw some other stuff
so
in there.
So right now, there's a woman by the name of Deb Cooper who looked me up, and she happens to live next door to Matthew Goodman, who used to be on the Ames City Council. Matthew makes beer. Matthew gives the spent grain to Deb. Deb brings me some. I then call Lana and I say, would you like to make spent grain today? So she comes and picks some up. And so basically you have the basic recipe, but you add a third of a cup of, or is it three quarters of a cup of spent grain?
Mm-hmm. And per how much flour?
A recipe. A pound loaf of bread.
Oh, okay. So so about three quarters of a cup of spent grain per loaf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has a distinctive flavor, which I like a lot.
Yeah. So all that stuff left over from beer is pretty good. And also the spent grain is really good for chickens and other beasties, too. But if you can grab
on... They don't get drunk on it, do they?
No, no. If you can grab onto some of it beforehand, it really adds a nice texture to bread. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Helen, for turning me on to this Peter Reinhardt person, because I have tried baking bread on and off. And yes, I can follow a recipe. Things are fine, back and forth. I've never really had one that I really liked, because like you said, like Donna read earlier from the Laurel's Kitchen, recipes were based on white bread, on the rising capabilities of white bread.
Yeah, we nearly lost our brown bread
and
traditions.
And so it was almost a joke that if you're going to have a whole wheat bread, you're going to have to chew a lot.
Door stopper. Yeah.
No, no. This recipe, his basic sort of way of making bread is doing a kind of a three-step process, right?
Well, I'd say... Actually, what's really neat is I've been researching pizza dough.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
And if you, I've never heard of Craftsy. It's Craftsy.
Craftsy is a website business.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like Etsy for artists and homemaking, but also on Craftsy they have, you can download videos on craft techniques, sewing, cooking, and a few other things.
Baking.
So Peter Reinhardt has one on there on making pizza.
And apparently it's a free video.
Yeah, it's a free series.
Great.
It's a free series. So I've just watched the first half of the first video. But as he explains it, it's sort of like an epoxy method. Because...
Epoxy. Gooey, I guess.
Well, not necessarily.
No, but two starts.
Yeah, you think of part A and part B.
Mm-hmm.
And most of his whole grain breads use that. So a basic wheat bread would be you put in one bowl the flour, the water, and the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
You put in the other bowl the flour, the water, and the salt. Okay, and you manipulate them per instructions, and then you let them sit at least overnight. One of them is called the biga, and one of them is called...
The sponge or the starter?
I don't know. It's something like that.
Something. Yeah, but I had never done that sort of thing before. And these, even without the yeast in one of them, thyme and...
Wild yeast.
And the wild yeast in the air and a little, not heat, but a temperate climate, does things, the yeasts are alive and they deal with the flowers and they kind of turn into their own little interesting beasties.
So it has to sit in a warm place, like at least 75 degrees.
No, overnight.
Overnight?
One of them goes in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. They can both go in the refrigerator.
Oh, chill.
Or one can be in the refrigerator and one on the counter.
Yeah.
And you can keep it in the refrigerator up to 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening is it's fermenting during that time.
Right.
So it's doing some of your work for you. And even Peter Reinhardt refers to this Laurel's Kitchen's cookbook. And he talks about it being an excellent cookbook, excellent on breads. But he said, like in there, I was trying to see this morning, I think you have to stir it a lot first. And if you do it by hand, you have to knead that for 40 minutes or so. And
whoa.
You know.
With my arthritic hands.
No.
Yeah. So with this, you do the part A and the part B, and they don't really start doing the bread making work. Well, I don't know.
The handwork.
It's like when you join the two together. So what I do is like I've had this sitting overnight or whatever. I take the two parts. I put it on a floured surface. I take a cutter, and I cut it into about the size of ice cubes, or maybe a bar of soap or something like that.
And this stuff has risen a little bit, so there's a texture, there's a bounce to it.
Yeah, it's already got a life to it.
Yeah.
And then you put those together with, like, say, your honey and your oil or something like that. You put it in the mixer with the paddle.
Oh, the dough hook.
No, you start with the paddle.
Oh.
And it's for 2 minutes to
work. And you're
using
your KitchenAid.
Yeah, and then I think you let it sit. Then you use the dough hook for a certain amount of time. And then in all of his doughs, there's a point where you just let it sit on the counter for 5 minutes. And then you come back and you shape it. No, you come back and you someplace you need it.
Yeah, you do.
So this is all in the Craftsy video. I'm going to have to
watch it. I don't know what's in the Craftsy video because I've only watched part of the first one.
But it is in this book. It is in the Peter Reinhardt's Whole Grain Breads. His method, and there's a lot of ways to make bread, but this seems to be a really fine way to deal with whole grains or whole grain flours. It requires you to think of bread baking as a meanwhile sort of thing.
Yeah, meanwhile you go off and check your email.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I call it a habit.
Yeah, it's true. You think of it as if you are, I don't know, minding a baby. I'll check on you in a bit.
And or keeping animals. It needs to be tended to at certain intervals.
So it's a long-term process, and it's forgiving, and you can work with it, work with the rising.
Well, it's interesting because it doesn't take all that much time of actual activity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you need to be around the house, or you need to get back to the house at a certain stage. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you may be taking this stuff out of the refrigerator at 10 o'clock at night and then staying up all night to bake your bread, which... But interestingly, we had a thing at the church I go to a few years ago where lots of people brought in homemade breads for a bread sale. Mm-hmm. And in the discussions, I realized that not many people resonated with me on this because, I love my bread machine. I make bread for my mother. Yes. I make bread for this person. I make bread for that. And this takes an intention.
And a hands-on sort of thing. You talk about using your KitchenAid mixer to mix. I don't do that. I don't make as much bread as you do. But I knead everything by hand because I'm one of those strange people that absolutely loves to knead bread. I'm not going to knead it for 40 minutes, I tell you. That's why I like this Peter Reinhardt book because it...
You don't have to knead it for 40 minutes.
No, it's different depending on the bread. Mm-hmm. From 5 minutes to 10 minutes sort of thing, and then let it sit. Mm-hmm. It's very manageable, and I really like the hands-on, the intention, and it's a really nice it. And it, surprisingly, I have made bread that I really like, so there you go. I mean, talk about yeast bread. I've always enjoyed...
Oh, I had some of yours last week.
Yeah.
With Helen's spent grain.
Right. See?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Well, let me just say, I do make a lot of bread because somehow I cannot just do one loaf. I figure if I'm going to make a mess in the kitchen, you know, have at it. But most of these breads freeze really well. Now, like the focaccia, I think tastes better
fresh.
But the spent grain coming out of the freezer is pretty good. I do make mini loaves that are about 6 inches long.
Helen's very generous with her loaves around town.
Yeah. Somebody comes to my house, I say, can I send you... I think that comes out of not my parents' heritage, but some of the women of the rural neighborhood I grew up in that to share produce. And I also, by freezing like rolls or mini loaves, then I can have a loaf for myself. Mm-hmm. I used to hate it when I would make a big loaf and it didn't quite take the right shape or it'd be doughy in the middle. And then I saw off a third of it and have it and then wonder what to do with the rest. And the other thing is, on the first Friday of each month, the ISU Sustainable Agriculture Student Association organizes the dinner meal at Food at First, which is like our community soup kitchen. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, Jonah Powell, and I make bread.
It's quite a lot of bread, actually.
Yeah, I take down about one time I took 8 loaves of bread, but I've changed that. But I might take 4 loaves of spent grain and a couple loaves of cornbread and share them, and people rave about them.
It's a real fine thing to share and to the process is fun, but you could always give people a smile if you offer them some fresh bread.
Well, and that kind of bread with the whole grains is a... practically a meal in itself. Mm-hmm. It's very filling, hearty, substantial, satisfying.
Now, one thing that I'm beginning to experiment with, I have used Peter Reinhardt's pizza dough recipe for pizza.
Well, that sounds like fun, doesn't it?
It's okay. But you can only keep it in the refrigerator a day. So what I've discovered is that the focaccia bread, it says, the focaccia bread recipe, you can use that for pizza, and you can keep that in the refrigerator 3 days. And it is excellent.
Yeah.
And I'd like
to... Can you freeze the dough?
I don't know. Will you help me research that?
Well, people
give
do
it. Give
okay.
it a try.
Put some in the freezer, take it out 3 days later, and then let us know.
And like the PFI has on-farm research, this could be in-kitchen research.
I think there needs
We're
to be more of
that
done.
But
yes,
can I just
do.
Quick say one more thing here? Peter Reinhardt has an interesting book. I looked him up on Wikipedia this morning, and it makes it sound like he started his career in 2005. And then his most popular book is The Bread Revolution, and it doesn't even mention the whole grain breads book. But when I first, when Bill Lindsay first told me about The Bread Baker's Apprentice, sometimes when I go to Amazon, I order more than one book. So I ordered Brother Juniper's bread book.
Mm-hmm. And it's his early.
And his history of being a seminarian, he was a brother.
Wait, so Peter Reinhardt is Brother Juniper? Yes.
I guess so.
I think so.
And so he partially was in seminary, was a brother, and he partly, I think, was part of a communal project and started this Brother Juniper's.
Baking.
And isn't that in Sebastopol, California, someplace around there? Well, I was in a Presbyterian seminary in the north San Francisco Bay, and interned in St. Helena, and all up in that area. So he seems sort of like a brother to me.
Yes, the same yeasts are in the air. Yes. We are in the kitchen. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are in the kitchen with Helen Gunderson today, talking about bread. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. We're back. Donna and I are in the kitchen with Helen Gunderson, and we're talking bread. Donna's been talking about yeast bread, in particular whole grain breads, and local flours and good stuff you can do locally, taking time.
And Lana brought in the Irish soda bread, which I have to say is possibly the best I've ever tasted. It looked beautiful, just I couldn't resist cutting into it. And then it tastes great. Usually I find soda bread a bit boring.
This is that is flavored with cardamom, and I am not
and
shy.
And a tad bit of sugar and buttermilk.
Yes,
good recipe.
I am not shy about my using my cardamom, and I'll share this recipe with you. And also, this Irish soda bread recipe will be on the
posted
Donna Lena Kitchen website. Go to khoifm.org, find the talk section, pull down the Donna Lena Kitchen.
And we'll try to get it up really fast so you can bake it for St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yes, yes. So this is a nod to St. Patrick's Day. Irish soda bread, I got it from...
And it is not a yeasted bread, so it's much easier than the process that we were talking about.
Right. I made it this morning, and I'm not an early morning riser, so you can be done in a relatively short amount of time. It's 4 cups unsifted regular flour. I tend to use half and half spelt and whole wheat, better for bread flour.
So you used early morning harvest whole wheat bread flour.
Right.
Okay, the pastry flour. Okay.
No, not a teaspoon salt, 3 teaspoons baking powder, 1 teaspoon soda. Sugar, it calls for 1/4 cup. You can make this bread sweeter or not as you
did
need.
Did you put 1/4 cup in
yeah,
this?
Yeah, I put 1/4 cup.
It's just perfect.
I like a little
but
bit.
But it's good.
Yeah. And 1/4 cup of... quarter teaspoon of cardamom. Cardamom is so good. 1/4 cup of butter, 1 egg, and 1 3
buttermilk.
Cups buttermilk. And again, if you don't have buttermilk, I used a little bit of kefir culture. Mixed some kefir with some milk the night before, set it out on the counter, used that instead. And then in the morning, I put in an extra tablespoon of apple cider vinegar to kind of give it a little kick. So there you have it. And it will be on the website. This makes 2 smallish or 8-inch sort of roundish.
I have a little tip about cardamom. If your cardamom has been sitting on the shelf for more than 6 months, use more than the recipe calls for. Or better yet, go get some fresh cardamom because it is one of the spices that it rapidly loses its flavor.
Mm-hmm. And you end up, it takes a short kneading process, 2-3 minutes. You make a little round loaf, and I added raisins.
Currants.
Currants and raisins.
Oh, currants and raisins.
And traditionally, this ends up in a little round loaf. Traditionally, because this is Irish soda bread, you slash the top to make an X, make a cross on the top, and because the bread will rise, and it makes everything taste good, and it will be on the website. I originally got this recipe, and I adapted it a little bit, from the Sunset Cookbook of Breads. I've had this bread recipe, bread book for a long time, and it's all got pages missing, and it's all stuck full of
bread dough.
Greasy fingers. And so it's a good recipe book. Irish soda bread. Helen, you deal with yeast breads. You were saying something about gluten before.
Well, I was looking at my notes here, and I have a couple of things I'd like to say before the gluten. Is that okay? So, first of all, anybody that would have known me as a child or a teenager, or even in my 20s, would never have known that I had this kind of interest. I disdained women's work, and I saw being in the kitchen as women's work, and I preferred to be out with...
You didn't even know you had this interest.
No, I didn't. Secondly, when I listed the kinds of breads that I like to make, and you mentioned, you made a reference to brown bread, I make a Boston brown bread recipe from Peter Reinhardt. And
now, is that a yeasted or a quick bread?
It's
the brown
bread. It's a quick bread. Yeah. And it's made in a tin can, like a juice can chili bean can. And I call it Iowa brown bread because I use Iowa buttermilk, Iowa sorghum syrup, Iowa
wheat
corn, and rye from early morning harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And I have even put some of my... The original recipe calls for raisins, but I have put some of my gooseberries in it or different things like that.
And oh, it's great. And she has good gooseberries.
So there you go.
So we mentioned the Bread Revolution book by Peter Reinhardt, and I think he's got a gluten-free cookbook beyond that. And I looked at that, and it looked like it was mainly for desserts. But what I found interesting is he addresses this issue of should we just throw out wheat, just throw out bread because of the gluten issues. And he's not ready to do that.
Me either.
I know. And one thing that I think that I'd love to see, like, in Ames, maybe at a PFI conference or something else, is to have somebody like Peter Reinhardt come who knows their bread science in and out and knows their bread baking in and out and talk with the people that are growing the cover crops and say, okay, what kind of wheat could be grown in Iowa? Could we grow the heirloom wheat that is more conducive to health? Or even the cover crop wheat that we're growing, does it fall, does it have the same problems as other modern
wheat? Well, because wheat's like other grains were originally developed for the climate that you actually had. There were many, many, many kinds of wheats. So there must be some that would fit our particular mm-hmm. growing season.
And I think some of it has to do with the chromosomes in the modern wheat that make it more problematic for people's health.
Yes, I believe I've heard that wheat is one of the most highly, one could almost say, overbred mm-hmm. and bred for not necessarily for nutrition, but for, you know, volume.
Marketability.
Tonnage.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me go back to, you asked about the sprouted grains. In the Bread Revolution book by Peter Reinhardt, he then goes on to talk about the potential of sprouted grain. And I think you can buy sprouted flour, mm-hmm. sprouted grain flour. You can also make your own. So I have done that with wheat berries. I've done that with corn kernels. And basically...
So you do it by keeping them moist at a certain yeah. temperature till they actually...
In a jar. You put mm-hmm. it in a jar with some water, and you drain mm-hmm. the water off. And then you let it sit. And then when it makes a little... I guess it's called a radical that comes out of the seed.
Oh, what a good name.
Pointy poke, yeah.
Yeah. And so then when that happens, you spread it out and you let it dry. So it doesn't take a lot of time, again, but you have to, it's intention.
You have to pay attention. Yes.
And then when it dries, I grind it. And so I have made the sprouted wheat bread, which tasted awesome. The taste of the wheat really came through, but it was chewy like a brownie, and a lot of people couldn't comprehend that. And then I've also made the sprouted cornbread.
That I have never tried. That sounds really interesting.
And made it with teff flour. And it was excellent, but it was a little bit more like a corn pudding. You know, it wasn't dry.
Teff can do that also. Yeah.
So, okay. That it?
Yeah.
I tell you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so what Peter says in his book, The Bread Revolution, is that gluten is a seed protectant. Gluten is there to protect the seed so that when the seed is sprouted, when that little radical comes out, it is no longer a seed. It is a plant. And there's something changed in the, would you call it chemistry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that there's...
Of the grain, yeah.
Of the grain.
Of the
so
kernel,
that either,
yeah.
I don't know if it's less gluten or no gluten, but I would think that people who...
Are gluten-sensitive.
Gluten-sensitive.
Opposed to gluten-intolerant.
Yeah, if they were just gluten-sensitive, they might want to try
sprouted grains.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds wonderfully magic. And it is. It is. Making bread is a wonderful thing. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with Helen Gunderson today. Yes, yes. We've had music celebrating St. Patrick's Day. We'll go out with The Farewell to Ireland, The Fox Hunter's Reel by three great fiddlers, Kevin Berg, Johnny Cunningham, and Christian Lemaitre. Okay, here we go. And
happy St. Patrick's Day coming up.
Support this radio station. Go to khoifm.org. Find our website there and support this radio station. And contact us. What's on your plate? My name's Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas with Irish soda bread in her mouth.
There you go.
I have same.
Okay. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. Eat good food and enjoy life.